to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Say what?
Hey everybody, it's Owen. Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. Had a real treat this week. Got to sit down with Cal Poly basketball legend Mike Wozniak. Woz, of course, is the co-host of the Sports Bite on ESPN Radio 1280 during drive time in San Luis Obispo. He also is the color commentator for Cal Poly basketball and does national color commentary as well. And we got to sit down and talk a little bit about his career at Cal Poly and the direction that this Cal Poly team is going under head coach Joe Calero. I wanted to talk a little bit more with Woz about some of his local things that he does with local youth players, with his three ball academy and some other things that I think we'll probably get into the next time we talk to him. But it was a real treat to sit down with him for the time that we did before the basketball game last Saturday. And I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did. It's Mike Wozniak on the Fansmanship.com podcast. Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. I am joined today by somebody who's kind of from my childhood, actually. I guess not my childhood. He's not that much older than me, but growing up in Cayucas and being in high school during the time that he was a star at Cal Poly, Mike Wozniak. Woz, how's it going?
Doing well, Owen. Thanks for having me. Fansmanship.com. What a brilliant idea. I want to see this thing grow huge.
Yeah, we're having a good time with it. You know, it's kind of doing what we can, well we can. Woz is originally from the Midwest, we were just talking about. And for those of you folks who are in California, I want him to describe, you're from Carmel, Indiana. Describe Carmel, Indiana for me.
Well, school-wise, I mean, it's like a mini college. 4,000 kids, huge athletic department. I was telling somebody the other day, they're kind of like the UCLA of high school sports in the state of Indiana. Over 120 state championships. Swimming program has won a bunch of championships. The basketball team and the football team won state titles last year. I actually moved to Carmel, Indiana, a junior in high school.
Okay.
I grew up in Northwest Indiana, moved to South Carolina, moved to Texas, and actually spent a lot of my informative years in Texas, 6th through the 10th grade,
okay,
before moving back to the Midwest in Carmel. Really credit my parents for having the foresight to get back to that area and being a sports-crazed place.
Sure.
Carmel, Indiana was fantastic growing up. A lot of sports, okay, a lot of passion, a lot of energy. Pretty fun place to live.
So you're a basketball star in Carmel in Indiana. What brought you to the West Coast? Like, what's the story there? I was reading something about it. You know, kind of there weren't a ton of big major college offers in the Midwest. Is that kind of how it went?
Yeah, there were a couple things cracking in the Midwest. There were opportunities with Butler and Ball State and Indiana State as an invited walk-on, but it was always my goal to earn a Division I scholarship.
Sure.
Yeah. And there was interest at one point or another from a lot of different conferences on the East Coast. Davidson was involved. You looked at other programs that, you know, within the Midwest, it was just one of those where, to be quite honest with you, you're naive as a high school kid. You want to go as high of a level as you want, as you possibly can, and you kind of put all the other things aside. So throughout my recruiting process, a good family friend who had lived out here on the West Coast said, hey, well, why don't you come out and play in an exposure tournament? It was kind of the infancy of what the Pump Brothers were doing at that time.
Okay.
I came out and ironically played for Bob Gottlieb and his Branch West crew.
Okay.
And had really one great weekend. And from that weekend, had scholarship offers from San Diego, from Cal Poly,
uh-huh,
and a couple other West Coast schools to consider.
Nice.
I'd actually met with Henry Bibby the day he got the job at USC,
uh-huh,
and they were considering me, mm-hmm, as kind of a backup guy and if someone fell out. But
cool.
Really the decision to take Cal Poly was first and foremost the academics, you know, the prestigious academic institution. That was always my goal. And then secondly, a chance to play as a freshman.
Which I did.
Right. You know, I was able to fit into Coach Snyder's system and really recognize who he was trying to recruit and the style he was trying to play. And then thirdly, was just a city, a college environment that you could really enjoy. You know, it didn't hurt with the weather coming from the Midwest. And really wasn't afraid to get away from family. Moving so many times growing up, I was
kind of used to it.
I look forward to it.
What were your first impressions of San Luis Obispo? I asked people this because I'm from here, so it's kind of like, you know, where I'm from. What were your first impressions or things that were maybe surprising or that you didn't expect about the area?
Yeah, you know, coming in on my recruiting visit, my mom actually came with me, and, you know, as influential as my dad was in my basketball career, said, hey, you know, if mom likes the place, then we'll bring dad out and, you know, we'll kind of score it from there. But I remember flying in specifically on one of those little planes, landing in San Luis and kind of getting the aerial of it and seeing so many, you know, they weren't mountains, but they were, you know, big enough hills to say, yeah, okay, you know, I think and I remember coming out of the airport and it's like, well, downtown's that way, because I knew we came this way and there wasn't too much south of that. So
right.
My first impressions here was obviously a beautiful campus and, you know, near the ocean and close to the ocean. It was one of those where you knew there was something special there without the athletics being what they are now. Right. You just kind of had the feeling that there was a great atmosphere and a great energy surrounding this campus. So really enjoyed it from the start.
Talking with Mike Wozniak, Big West freshman of the year, I think 96, 97. Was that your first year?
97 was freshman of the year.
And Mike came to San Luis Obispo, came to Cal Poly, second all-time leading scorer in Cal Poly history, 1,903 points, all-time leading three-point shooter at Cal Poly, second all-time, I believe, in the Big West, 20.3 points per game his junior year, 17 in his career. So you got here to San Luis. The first impressions were that, you know, it's kind of a beautiful place, kind of rural for you being from kind of the Indy area, or, I mean, you can get pretty rural pretty quick out of Indianapolis too, right, and out of Carmel, right?
Well, yes. I mean, Indiana has its cornfields and its flat highways, and, sure. You know, we had the ocean here and the sunshine, and I still remember calling my parents my freshman year when we were here for Christmas break and practice that, you know, I didn't have a shirt on after practice and was outside, and, you know, they're back in the snow.
And it was okay.
And it was okay. You know, it was encouraged, nice and warm. So right. The impressions of this place were you felt safe here. You read all the Reader's Digest stuff and the news and world reports, and, of course, my mom dissected it all. She said, hey, you know what? I feel comfortable with you going out there.
It's a pretty safe place.
And really one of my analyst points was a plane ride. You know, it was a four-hour plane ride or a five-hour plane ride or a three-hour. You still got to get on a plane. So whether I was going to the East Coast, whether I was going to the South, a plane ride was a plane ride.
It is. And when you talk about getting there an hour or two early, you know, you're 6 versus 7 hours of a trip is, right. You know, it's not that big of a difference. Being from Indiana, and I'll ask you this question this way. As a high school kid coming to watch games with, you know, you and Larson, who was here at the time, and some of those, you know, 1-2 guard tandems that you guys had, two things kind of struck me, I remember, as like probably a junior in high school, a sophomore in high school. Quick release and just kind of fundamentals with footwork as far as shooting goes, as far as coming off screens. Those are things that, to me, you don't see a lot of like freshmen coming out of high school who are even like really great. I mean, we were down at UCLA, and you see some of those guys who have decent footwork, but none of them where that really stands out with you. They're relying so much more on their athleticism. You being what, 6'1", 6'2", you kind of got to rely on that stuff. Would you describe your game kind of as old school when you're and is that the kind of color commentator you feel like you are too?
You know, I look at growing up and learning how to play and, you know, watching others play. I distinctly remember because I was a Bird fanatic, a Celtics fanatic. My parents both went to Indiana State.
Okay.
And I grew up.
Sycamores.
Yeah, that's right. I grew up on the couch taking stats of the Celtics. And while I never really saw John Havlicek play, my dad always described.
You heard about him a lot.
I heard about him. He said, he never stopped moving. He always was moving. Difficult to guard because he knew how to come off screens and the quick release you spoke of. But I think there were other factors involved in kind of learning how to shoot and score. I remember my dad would get the broom out. And, you know, he's only 5'10", 5'11", but he'd get the broom, and I'd learn to shoot over and around the broom, or many times quicker than he could get the broom up there.
Okay.
But as far as shooting, absolutely. I really believe it came with footwork, and I've always had really good hand-eye coordination, and obviously that helps with shooting. So just the development from a young age and learning it correctly at a young age, and then you mix in the what my dad calls the C word, the confidence. But it's one of those where if you can get a look and you feel that you've taken that look before, right. You just believe you're knocking it in.
And would you describe yourself still as kind of that kind of fundamental old school guy as far as watching the game? I know you do you do a lot of work with youth basketball in the area with three ball. Is that still a way that you'd kind of describe your
Absolutely. I believe in one of the sayings is skill is a divider. You could be 6'5", but you can also be 6'1". And if you have a skill set that is able to set yourself apart from better athletes, that's how you keep up. So skill being a divider, that was always one of my goals. And in teaching and helping kids, I always try to give them a solid fundamental base of what they can have regardless of who they're going up against.
And I always see that, I looked on the three ball website because obviously you're the guy for that. But I see that you also bring in some old Cal Poly guys who are local as well. Philip Johnson, who's the cousin of Luke Johnson, who's one of the three of us who does fansmanship too, was on there. That was kind of cool to see being from around here, keeping it. With guys from around here.
It's really one of the things I respect as far as college athletes. Most recently a guy like David Hansen. I can go back to years of Steve Geary and so many other players that have been at Cal Poly, but yet at other schools too. Being a student athlete is important in a couple ways. There's a lot of discipline to it. There's a lot of communication. There's a lot of relationships. And I think particularly through three ball, I try to expose those kids to players or student athletes that have been there and done that. Not that they're going to tell them how to do it exactly, but just as kind of a model to see.
Role model, right?
Yeah. Exactly. So I think it's a great, especially in this area, because kids, they don't have the opportunity to go to USC and UCLA and Stanford every single home game. But, Cal Poly is that local product, and there's been, between the football programs and baseball and basketball, it's just been fantastic what these coaches have been able to do.
Back in the day, about all we had was the Don Hanson Cuesta College basketball camp.
It's a lot different now.
And it's a lot different now. I know Bob Cantu does a camp, and there are other, smaller camps around. Right. I mean, that thing used to be huge. I mean, you'd have, 300 kids there or something, for 3 2-week sessions, and that thing was ridiculously big.
It's funny too, because with our training, one of my philosophies is you can learn to play 3-on-3 and 4-on-4, and you really learn how to share the ball and create shots. And I think camps and styles, heck, Kobe was talking about it the other day about Dwight Howard. He was basically saying, Dwight Howard's poor free throw shooting is because he didn't learn the proper way growing up as a youngster. They put him in the post. They made him dunk. They made it, you're big, you're strong, get down in there.
When he was 8 and 6 feet tall.
Exactly.
Right.
So it's one of those where you look at what sort of influence do players have at a young age. And, you make the European transformation of a lot of those guys being able to dribble and shoot at young ages. And I think it's a style that's important, because if you grow physically to it and you're mentally tough enough, if you've drilled and skilled as young as you are, you can make it.
I can picture guys at camps, Coach Larson at El Paso, for instance, who used to be the guy who always taught shooting at the Cuesta camp, and guys like that, who I can totally picture, when I was probably 8 or 9, showing the proper form and then making you go practice it. Definitely an important thing. Here with Mike Wozniak from ESPN Radio 1280, The Sports Bite. So how long have you been doing The Sports Bite now?
Yeah, since inception.
So 8 years.
I lose track. I'm terrible with this.
I'll tell you why I know that, because I was listening to 1280 on the way in. They said, 8 years of providing sports on the Central Coast. So there you go.
And I've heard that commercial.
Maybe you've heard it for 2 years or something.
No, I don't think that long. But I think the way it went, if I remember correctly, and Tom Barquette was actually my first partner doing it.
Okay.
There were times, obviously, with CJ Silas and Ryan Bennett, and we've had Dave Ollis now. It's been really a fantastic. Sometimes I call it a hobby, because it's a passion where we're getting in there and kind of able to free flow and go with what we know and what we're passionate about. But it's really been a tremendous venue to branch out and be able to experience things I never really thought I would, whether it's going to PGA Tour events, whether it's going to other basketball venues. ESPN 1280 here on the Central Coast. I mean, I wish we had the power signal of 1090 in San Diego, but it's just not possible.
That's coming out of Tijuana.
That's right.
Yeah, you're not getting that power unless you go across a border somewhere. So you've been at 1280 and doing the Sports Bite for about 8 years now. What made you want to get into broadcasting?
Yeah, it's funny, because I originally started doing Cal Poly games just as a color guy. Randy Scoville, back in the day, recently worked with out at a Cuesta game. We reunited.
I saw you guys out there. Yeah. Uh-huh.
He invites me to do a game when my schedule permits and when I can get out there. It's just, I've been so fortunate that a lot of people have given me chances to be on air and to talk about obviously one of my passions in basketball. So back, it really started with doing Cal Poly basketball as a color, and kind of parlayed into what Mike Chelson's dream was to start ESPN 1280 here on the Central Coast. He said, oh, let's do a daily talk show. I said, hey, I'm in.
Was it something that when you were in school, you thought, hey, I want to go into media afterwards? Or was it just something that you kind of, like you said, you just kind of got asked to do the color, and then kind of one thing led to another?
Yeah, you know, I think every kid's goal when they go play college basketball is to play professionally. And, you know, why I did that for a year or so playing in the ABA and the IBA, I quickly knew that it wasn't going to be a future for me.
Got it.
So I graduated in 4 years with my undergrad in business, and then I didn't get involved in radio immediately, but it was, like I said, it was games that I did. But really, it was never a passion to do that. Doesn't every kid want to be a doctor?
Sure. A professional basketball player or
something. Yeah. Like that.
Absolutely.
So radio just kind of fell into that. Okay. But I've always had a passion, like you said, for training kids and working with kids. And, you know, as 3-Ball developed and as ESPN developed,
yeah.
Really enjoyed both of those venues to continue to work with two of my passions.
Got it. Let's talk about this year's Cal Poly team. Yeah. They're 2-3. One of their big wins was at UCLA. We were both down there for that. Yeah. Was that one of the kind of the most unique games you've ever seen with a team who's such an underdog with an 18-point deficit with, you know, what was it, 14 or 12 minutes to go, and a couple things happen here and there, a couple bounces, a couple turnovers, shots start to fall.
Yeah.
Was that kind of one of the most unique games you've ever seen?
Oh, without a doubt.
It was for me.
Yeah, because you look at the history of that program, I mean, just walking around and knowing what Coach Wooden, an Indiana guy, was able to accomplish. And it's like you know what has been done before then, and you know what's expected of certain programs like that. But in all honesty, looking at that game, if you take the jerseys off of them and you just look at the players, I thought there were times, you know, 3 or 4 different players at a time that Poly was faster than UCLA. And the freshmen of UCLA, while they're highly touted, they're still learning how to play. And you take a 4th or 5th year senior, his experience compared to a rookie for UCLA, it was a surprising outcome. But the way that Poly did it leading up to it, there's no doubt who the better team was as far as execution late in that game. UCLA screwed up numerous possessions of not throwing in the post, but as far as big things, no one expected that. I mean, you look at the Cal Poly football team and some of their 1A upsets over the course, but as far as basketball is concerned, nothing even close.
Yeah, and I was talking to JD, and he said even football, you know, this is the 11th ranked team in the country at any level. I mean, it'd be like going and beating UCLA this year, or an SEC team that was in the top half of the SEC. You just don't see that from a Cal Poly team generally.
And I think that what was important, because Cal Poly basketball has had so many different styles over the course of the years. When you look at Schneider and Bromley and obviously Coach Kaler, I think Coach Kaler has done such a fantastic job of making every single kid in that program believe and unite. And you can, at least I can, the obvious love and respect the players have for him.
Yeah.
And I made the comment after the game that victories like that are, yeah, they're accomplished within the 40 minutes that they play right there. But that's 4 years of work that Calero has put in, and 4 years of discussion and belief within those guys. The culture was set way before that victory. The opportunity isn't always there to play UCLA, and you got to cherish it. And maybe 9 times out of 10, you don't get all the calls or make all the shots. But when you look at a shooter and Dylan Royer stepping up and making shots, and Eversley and, you know, freshman Bennett inside, it was one of those where the timing was right. The gods were together.
Yeah, I just really I've talked about it a few times this year. There's a level of maturity with these guys, even the guys who are sophomores or juniors, even freshmen sometimes. And they're Calero's guys. And one thing, I think I made a comment to somebody about it, it seems like UCLA kind of, at the beginning of Howland's tenure, those were Howland's guys. You could tell, you know, they're the Oboyas, the Mbamutes, the Aflalos. I don't know if you recruited Aflalo, but those were Howland guys, you know, cerebral players who kind of had a picture for things. It seems like with his new, you know, recruiting classes that he's had the last, I guess, 2 or 3 years, they don't seem like as much kind of Howland guys. Howland wants to be a grinder, I think, like Calero does, and at least that's my intuition. And it seems like not that those guys could never grind, but maybe when you have freshmen, You know, things like keeping the intensity up the entire game. I mean, Brian Bennett talks about that this year even. And what's the biggest difference right now? Well, it's just the intensity level and keeping it up for the entire 40 minutes.
The love for defense, it didn't seem like UCLA has it far this year and really in the past couple of years. But it's that combination of dealing with one-and-dones and recruiting who all your fans think you should recruit versus the guys you can get. So, some issues down there, but that's not Cal Poly's problem.
I want you to talk about two guys really quick, and we have a couple more minutes here. Chris Eversley, he's almost certainly going to be the team's leading scorer this year. He, you know, is looking, I mean, looking like it's going to be above 15 points a game probably. I mean, we'll see how conference goes once teams really start to – key in on him, but he seems like a player who gets his points in all kinds of ways and just has really impressed me from the middle of last year when he started to make some of those strides and he got into the starting lineup even some at the end of last year. What are your thoughts on Chris Eversley?
You said it, versatile. I mean, a guy that has confidence to face the basket and take shots. I mean, his athleticism is second to none on the team. Of course, I think every fan would love him to be a couple inches taller so that he could command it in the post. But that's the difference of a higher level conference and the size difference. But as far as his intensity, I think his work ethic has been tremendous. And he's got the type of skills in the Big West where if teams don't respect him, he can put up some big numbers.
So, he's going to be the consistent thing, I think, for Cal Poly this year. Like, every game, I think you're going to get a similar effort from Eversley, whether it's, a 10-point game or a 15- or 20-point game.
Right.
He's going to be the guy that other teams have to key on. Talk about the importance, then, of having a freshman play consistently. And, I heard a coach say, Brian Bennett's playing like a senior and he's a freshman. Talk about the importance of him kind of stepping up and providing, really good contributions each game. And for me, that might be the difference this year for Cal Poly in conference, whether they finish 7th or 8th or 9th, like they're predicted to finish 7th, or whether they kind of surprise some people and get into that top, 3 to 4 teams in the conference.
It's interesting because I think freshmen – when they come to town, coaches a lot of times will tell them, hey, I'm not guaranteeing a starting spot, but you're going to be playing these minutes, and we really need you. And I think freshmen grow up a lot quicker when they're put in scenarios like Bennett is. And obviously he's got some physical tools. I think his face-to-basket jumper is far better than anyone had expected.
That 17-footer is pretty sweet. Yeah.
Looks soft, looks good. I think he starts to put even more versatility to it with pump fakes and getting to the rim a little bit more. And, we know his story as far as his conditioning and his mentality, how much he's lost and how more he'll continue to gain. But I think it's special. And I think back to the years when I played here, because it seemed like every year we had a freshman, maybe not conference player of the year, but highly involved in being influential on the team.
Right.
And that's entirely a culture of what coaches can provide for players. And I think when they show a little bit of – when a coach shows that he needs you, freshmen can kind of say, I can do this. There's just enough naivety to say, I'm not supposed to be doing, I should be doing this.
They don't know any better.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and I think, with Bennett's biceps and strength.
Guy has the broadest shoulders I've ever seen.
He's not going to get outworked from that angle.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think his offense has been one of those fantastic things that fans didn't necessarily expect, but have now come to enjoy.
Playing, I always kind of describe players like yourself as kind of a green light guy. You got the open shot, you're going to take it.
When in doubt, shoot.
Yeah, when in doubt, yeah. I was at a coach's clinic, and Steve Alford was there, New Mexico coach, right?
Uh-huh. I grew up watching him in the Hoosiers. He was Newcastle guy and played against his dad. His dad's a longtime high school coach in Indiana.
He was messing with some of the players who he was demonstrating with, and he goes, what's the plan? Get me the ball. And he still had that kind of shooter's mentality. Like when in doubt, you don't shoot the ball, I shoot the ball. Like, the mentality that the team who gets their best player the most shots is the team that's generally going to win. So you were a green light guy. How would it have been for you to play for a coach like Joe Calero, who's more of like a ball control kind of guy? I was thinking about this today because your coach was certainly. I mean, you guys were a fast-paced team.
Sure.
You like to to get the ball up pretty quick if you could, and you know, small and quick and moving around. Calero's offense seems a little bit more slow paced. What do you think that would have been like?
I learned more defense after I got out of college than when I was in it, and that's unfortunate now because we had the types of skills and scores where we can compete with just about any team. But if we were as grindy as Coach Calero's teams were on defense, we'd been a heck of a lot better. You know, we were basically a 500 program in my 4 years here. Right. It was perceived as much more because of what we did at home.
And because of what happened before. Yeah. I mean, in the early 90s, you know, the transition to D1.
There were some poor records, you're right. Yeah. But it's funny you bring that up because Coach Calero and I were actually joking about that last night. And he was saying something to the effect of three-point records. And and I basically told him, Coach, I'm smart enough to realize that some of the records I currently hold, including attempts, aren't going to be touched under your tenure here. and it's unfortunate for a guy like Dylan Royer because, you know, he'll rip the nets. You know,
sure.
Even Reese Morgan, when he starts getting his legs back a little bit more, Odister as well.
Odister's got some chutzpah.
You look at the green light, and I've been fortunate with the coaches I've had. Now I've earned that respect a little bit too by making shots in practice and you know, not being too wild with it. But it was definitely helpful to my game to have that ability or that allowance from a coach.
Sure. I think that's really interesting. You know, the perception of coaches are, and I think the comment that you learn more defense after college. I mean, you think about a guy like Calero. I mean, every little thing, offensively and defensively, is controlled for. Is, you know, his players have to be cerebral, and that's the kind of player. I think Chris Giovanetti last night on the podcast said something like, you know, those are his guys. He recruits guys at Cal Poly who can, a certain type of player who can handle that.
Well, just the weight room too. You know, I look at those guys down there, and I wish I had a body like them when I played. I would have gotten to the line a lot more.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I think. I was remembered as a 3-point shooter, but there were times, especially my sophomore year, you know, in the heart of the Big West, it was a pretty good conference with Oluokande, and Nevada had big players, and New Mexico State was really good. That was actually one of my years where I got to the free throw line the most.
Okay.
So, you know, any time a two guard was getting up in there to 100, 140 attempts in a season, you knew that they weren't just sticking on the three-point line entirely. So.
Well, that's how you get open for threes, too, is you got to drive a few times and keep guys on their heels as well. Speaking of guards and point guards and two guards, it seems like kind of one of the biggest things that's going to shake out. Cal Poly's kind of a known entity as far as who they're going to play this year. They have kind of nine, 10 guys that they rotate in and out. But there are some question marks from the standpoint of who's going to get minutes off the bench, whether it's going to be Reese Morgan or Kyle Odister, Zach Gordon's going to come off the bench, and how much time he's going to get spelling Bennett. But one of the things for me that kind of came up in the UCLA game was that Odister was playing the point guard position most of that comeback. And talking about, you know, Jamal Johnson, as he's really Joe's guy. He's Joe Calero's guy. He's running his offense how he wants it run. But maybe as the offense, can it be more dynamic when you have a kind of a green light guy who's running the point as well and Kyle Odister?
Well, there's no doubt about it that Odister brings a different flavor offensively. And, you know, I was pretty hard on Jamal Johnson his freshman year. I said the best thing about his freshman year is that it was over. You know, he was a guy that...
And that was the year the Odister was... Malik Love had to play point guard most of that year. Okay.
But for Jamal, it was just one of those where he's learned to love and cherish the basketball, and he's also done a phenomenal job of becoming a grittier defender.
Right.
Now, he still has a lot of offensive shortcomings, you know, most notably perimeter-wise.
Sure.
But just for Coach Calero to have the confidence in certain spurts to be able to throw a guy like Odister, I think it's still the weakest position on the team. Now he's gone out and recruited two very good point guards that are going to come in and be scorers. It's not for lack of trying.
Sure.
It's really the style in which Coach is playing right now isn't ideal to his system.
Right.
He wants a little bit more punch at that position, but Jamal's giving him everything that he could.
Absolutely, yeah. And like you said, it's not for lack of trying. I mean, Jamal's doing everything that Calero's asking him to do within his powers, I think. And I've even seen him knock down a few threes this year, along with Yu, who's playing a lot of point too. And I think to the extent that those guys are knocking down outside shots is the extent that Cal Poly can probably surprise a few teams in conference, you know, and if they have guys who are going to make some outside shots, I hate to say that it's going to come down to shot making or, you know, having the confidence to take some of those, you know, three pointers that seem kind of a little bit awkward timing wise in the offense. But I always feel like that's maybe this year going to be a big difference maker for them.
It really will, because manufacturing points, it's something that Pauly's had a trouble doing. I mean, they don't have guys at one on one, a Shane Schilling that can go get his, a Varney Dennis in the post that can just, he could score on double teams or single teams. I mean, Bjorklund was fantastic back in the day in the post. Pauly's had, over the course of years, guys that can go score at a moment's notice.
Right.
The issue for him this year is obviously they're going to have to play great defense, and then timely shot making is one of those, I think. But when you look at Coach Calero's desire for this group, he's going to continue to work. I'm very much anticipating throughout the conference year how much more creative he becomes with his sets.
Yeah.
We saw it at UCLA running guards off single doubles, starting to force defenders to really take away certain things, and it's a difference maker.
You get the feeling Calero wants to keep it in his hip pocket for conference. He doesn't want to give anybody any tape of stuff that he's really going to do. Yeah. Maybe they're practicing it or something. I don't know. I've only been to one practice, and they didn't, but, you know, what are you going to do? Last question I have, and it's about Malik Love.
Yeah.
Malik, a lot like Jamal, you know, shooting-wise from the outside, is more of a slasher, a driver, a little bit stronger, get-to-the-basket guy. Hurt his foot this year, and I actually saw him earlier this season. I joked with him about Derek Fisher. I don't know if you remember when Fisher hurt his foot for the Lakers in their second title run, came back with probably 10 games or something to go in the regular season, and in the playoffs was like lights out, and all you could picture him doing with a hurt foot was just taking like standstill jumpers because he couldn't move side to side very well. He wasn't going to do anything except just sit there and take standstill jumpers. Is that kind of a best case scenario for Malik Love, where he comes out and he has the jumper to go along with the already good driving game?
Yeah, anytime you get a chance to play, it's a good thing. But, you know, if it's with two games left in the season, who knows how long it's going to be. You don't want to entirely burn a year.
Yeah.
So there is that dynamic. Yeah. And the player has to be on board with it, too. I mean, rarely do you see a coach force a player to go out there.
Right.
But as far as Love, he should be energized. He should be licking his chops to play. I mean, this is a guy that loves physical confrontation in games as far as position defense and pushing. But, you know, shot making will remain an issue for the Mustangs throughout. I know some of their defensive games, at least most recently against St. Mary's, they've struggled a little bit. And they go against teams that can defensive game plan against them and take away their sweet spots and at the same time shoot the ball themselves. So it's going to be a tough conference for this season for Pauly. We know what the Big West is about to be as well.
Right.
But the best thing they've got going is their absolute belief in each other and their camaraderie, and they've got some youngsters stepping up as well. So awesome. It's exciting to see.
Waz, I know you got to go. Thanks a lot for the time, and hopefully we'll catch you again maybe later in the season.
You know, we'll do this again. We got to talk golf. We got to talk high school basketball. I want to talk more also about some of the other games I'm getting to call nationally on radio.
Yeah.
It's been outstanding, and this time of year is the best. It's almost Christmas, but it's always Christmas during basketball season.
Maybe I'll catch up with you in February or something.
That sounds good.
Right. Thanks, boss.
Thank you for listening to the Fansmanship.com podcast. For more news, opinions, and podcasts, go to www.fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Streetlights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue.
the signs out on the streets direct me running back.